Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael reading a local opinion column from the Odessa American published Thursday, April 28, 2022. The Economist by M. Ray Perryman. Emergency. Odessa faces a crossroads. Our decision in the upcoming school bond election will define our future. No exaggeration. The economic case is straightforward. As we transition into a climate-sensitive era, energy resources in the Permian Basin are critical. The latest government forecast indicates that the world will require 30% more oil and gas in 2050 than today, while wind and solar use explodes. Our area has the lowest carbon onshore oil on the planet. Demand will gravitate this direction. We are also an emerging center of renewable energy. Beyond the clean resources far beneath our feet, we are blessed with blowing wind and sun shining brightly on vast land expanses. Our energy will fuel economic expansion, lifting billions of people across the globe from poverty. No exaggeration. These enormous endowments are meaningless, however, unless we develop our greatest asset, the kids who depend on our public schools for their ultimate success. My analysis shows that the region will need 50,000 skilled workers by 2050 to sustain growth and replace retirees. The students that we educate today are the workforce supporting energy, healthcare, and other sectors tomorrow. Since arriving over 30 years ago, I have seen our community as a caring and compassionate environment. We possess resiliency, stemming from a century of economic gyrations that fosters a spirit of cohesion in trying circumstances. We have seen our character dramatically revealed of late, responding to a tragic mass shooting and a disruptive pandemic that claimed over 700 of our citizens. Unfortunately, these traits are less obvious in supporting our schools. Our oldest buildings date to Pearl Harbor. High schools to the Eisenhower administration. They lack the technology to deliver the education that a changing world demands. Hundreds of students are denied career training and needed occupations due to capacity constraints. Our high schools are chronically overcrowded. Class changes are an hourly crush of humanity, inevitably compromising safety and inhibiting learning. Students often find themselves in portable buildings that blanket every inch of many campuses or taught by dedicated instructors who haul materials in a backpack. We should do better than this. Despite these limitations, our schools are demonstrating notable accomplishments. For progress to continue, we must invest in essential facilities. Doing otherwise is eating our seed corn. This bond proposal meets the most urgent from a long roster of needs. It facilitates achieving our economic potential and, far more importantly, affords our kids the opportunity they deserve to become the homegrown workforce, citizens, and leaders of our future. It is a down payment on our destiny. The resources afforded by our support are far from a luxury. They go well beyond even a necessity. They are, no exaggeration, an emergency. Vote yes. M. Ray Perryman is the head of the Perryman Group and serves as a distinguished professor at the International Institute for Advanced Studies.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, April 23, 2022. Viewpoints. Updates coming. MCT announces plans to raise money to improve Cole Theater by Midland Community Theater. The more than 75-year-old nonprofit theater organization has announced its capital campaign. This plan envisions the installation of several updates at the Cole Theater on Wadley Avenue. The Cole Theater, originally constructed in 1978 by the founding executive director Art Cole, was designed from backstage forward to ensure the space required had everything the organization could possibly need to provide a quality theatrical experience both on and off stage. However, due to a shortage of funding, some parts of the project were never fully realized. New managing director Ken Olson began working on the Capital Campaign, a $7 million expansion and growth project, immediately upon his hiring in July. "I was excited to take on a project of this size, knowing what it will do for the theater and the community," Olson said. The Capital Campaign plans to add almost 3,000 square feet to the existing lobby space, giving patrons a much more comfortable and enjoyable experience when they come for a night at the theater. This also allows for larger internal events and will create a venue space for everything, from company luncheons to wedding receptions. It will also change the flow of traffic by moving the main entrance to the east side of the building. Because the lobby is expanding and pushing out, this creates the ability to add much-needed educational classroom space underneath it. "Currently, we have the amphitheater, which in its original days had many more uses," Olson said. "Now that Wadley has become such a busy road, it is extremely difficult to hear any type of performance out there due to the constant traffic." By removing the amphitheater and expanding the basement, the MCT Education Department will nearly triple its amount of dedicated classroom space. In addition to the expansions on the patron and education sides, the campaign will also add a huge technology upgrade with the addition of a 1,200 square foot LED wall to the back wall of the larger Davis Theater 1. Art Cole designed the back wall of the theater to be a projection wall, but with today's technology and new projections coming along, an LED wall will open the theater up to many possibilities and more advanced technical elements. The Capital Campaign is nearing its sizable goal, but the theater is now looking to the public for support. "We want the community to feel like they have ownership in this project and in this building," Olson said. "After all, it is your community theater." If you would like to contribute to the Capital Campaign, visit the lobby of the Cole Theater for more information and visual representations of the project, or visit our website, www.mctmidland.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, April 25th. Oil brings quality of life improvements to Reeves County. The story was written by Ruth Campbell. Oil activity in Reeves County has given the area such a boost that entities can now add some amenities to Pecos, a city of about 14,000. A new county hospital, paid for in cash, new schools and facilities for Pecos Barstow Toya ISD, an expanded golf course, sports complex, and rec center, to name a few, are all in the works or complete, said Ken Winkles, Jr., executive director of Pecos 4B Economic Development Corporation. The hospital is going to be a replacement for the current building. Winkles said the Economic Development Corporation sold the hospital the land is being built on. Winkles said his predecessor, William Oglesby, started the process in late 2014 or early 2015. He said they probably sold the hospital land sometime in the early part of 2016. Quote, "I'm glad the new hospital is coming online. They've had their challenges due to the supply chain issues," Winkles said. Brenda McKinney, administrator and CEO of the Reeves County Hospital District, said they are shooting for a mid-June opening. They planned an open house before that. Quote, "It'll be badly needed. It's twice as large, give or take, almost twice as large as the current facility," Winkles said. In the last 3 years, Winkles said, Pecos has spent over $333 billion in quality of life items. Quote, "You got a $178 million bond for the school. You got a $114 million new hospital. The county spent $18 million on the rec center. The city spent $15 million on the sports complex. The county spent another $8 million on the expansion of the golf course, $2.5 million on the senior citizen center, and another $1 million on the new library. If you add all those up, it approaches $350 million for a town of 14,000 people. So yeah, when you actually put it down on paper, it's a significant amount of expenditures by the taxing entities here to bring in the quality of life issues," Winkles said. Most entities had significant increases in taxable value, except the city of Pecos. Quote, "The city only owns the minerals underneath itself, which is the smallest part of Reeves County. They've seen a small increase," Winkles said. For 2021, the city of Pecos received about $773 million in tax revenue. "I learned this from a previous councilman. The city has the most infrastructure to take care of with the least amount of tax money," Winkles said. "If you take these increases in values and the property tax that is brought in, that's where you get the $333 billion worth of new quality of life amenities," Winkles said. With the new hospital, the $114 million price was paid in cash. Quote, "There's no debt, so there's no debt for the citizens of Pecos at all on this new hospital, so that's a good thing," Winkles said. He added that the amount of money the county has brought in has allowed them to finance the engineering of the first part of the Eastern Reliever Route, or the Loop. Quote, "Again, they spent their money wisely. Everybody has, actually. Like I said, when you come up with $350 million worth of new quality of life items in Pecos, that's a significant number," Winkles said. "These are all facilities that the county did not have before. Quote, "We had no recreation center. We had no sports complex. We did have a hospital that was 40 years old. The schools, Pecos High School was built 54 years ago and is still going to be there because it's not one of the schools on this bond. But Bessie Haynes Elementary is being replaced along with Austin Elementary. So it's two new schools coming in. The $350 million doesn't include the $20 million for the new football stadium," Winkles said. He added that a $20 million stadium, complete with purple track and yellow lines for the school colors, is being paid for out of PBTISD's fund balance. Winkles said the oil field has slowed down over the past few years like everybody else, but activity is starting to bounce back, as has the rig count. Quote, "We are at 30. We hadn't been at 30 since March of 2020. We've seen a significant increase over the last 2 months. City sales tax is stabilized," he added. He said one of the things he's learned in economic development is that without rooftops, retail doesn't come. Quote, "We didn't have the rooftops. So over the last 6 years, we've added 330-some-odd new housing units, that's duplexes, triplexes, apartments, and housing. I've got a 72-unit subdivision going right now that we've already sold 48 lots. We've got 30 new houses on the ground. We brought a new apartment complex online of 144 apartments. We hadn't had a new apartment complex in 50 years. Kind of like the same thing with the grocery store. It took 3 years to get United here. but we now are no longer a one grocery store town. That was a great achievement by everybody that was involved in getting them here, Winkle said. He added that he is currently in negotiations with new to national chains to bring new locations into Pecos. He said one of them is Burke's Outlet to replace Bell's. He added that other area small towns have done the same thing. Quote, I'm trying to always deal with national chains, but in my job, everything takes so long. Like United, it was 3 years, but it was well worth the wait. Good things come to those who wait, Winkle said. The Texas Department of Transportation has already taken over the yet-to-be-built reliever route from U.S. Highway 285 south to Highway 285 north. TxDOT told Reeves County they should do the engineering and the studies, and then TxDOT would see if they would take it over. The county hired Frank Spencer of Spencer & Associates in El Paso, and they conducted the studies. Winkle said the takeover is sometime around 2026. It includes about 2.5 years of right-of-way acquisition. Quote, so somewhere around 26, we should see the eastern reliever route start by TxDOT. They've officially taken it off of Reeves County's hands and got it in their pipeline. Now the city or the county is working on the second section being a connector from south to 285. Over to Highway 17, so that would be Section 2 of the loop, Winkle said. He added that the whole loop will probably happen in about 20 years. The eastern reliever route, or loop, will bring the traffic count down, he said. The intersection of U.S. 285 and Business I-20 has averaged 11,400 vehicles a day in the last 4 years. Of that, about 20% of it is truck traffic. Quote, there's about 2,500 trucks that come through that intersection a day. It, the loop, will highly bring the truck traffic down in downtown Pecos, Winkle said. North 285 used to be referred to as the Highway of Death, but Winkle said accidents have been cut significantly with the installation of Super 2s in the last roughly 4 years. Super 2s are rural highways that include periodic passing lanes. He added that he understands that TxDOT has plans to expand 285 south all the way to Fort Stockton. Winkles also looks at drilling permits, and through the first 3 months they are up 120% over last year. Quote, here's the way I look at it, is drilling permits tell you what's going to happen. So if you don't have any drilling permits, ain't nothing happening. This year, through March 31st, we've had 284. Last year, 144. So it's up 120%. We were at 30 rigs last week, and a month ago, we were at 22. That doesn't sound like much. However, that's a 20% increase. The last time we were at 30 was March of 2020, exactly 2 years ago, Winkle said. They were at 85 rigs in November 2018. Quote, so the more rigs, the more sales tax, the more activity. And what I look at, again, is the drilling permits, Winkle said. The drilling permits tell you that sooner or later, companies will be drilling because they don't get those drilling permits for nothing, he added. Donate Life Month highlights need for more donors. The story was written by Carol A. Cates, Chief Nursing Officer, Odessa Regional Medical Center. Last week, I wrote about why it's so important to talk to your loved ones and your primary health care provider about end-of-life decisions. I deliberately ended that article talking about another thing it's very important to talk to your family about, organ and tissue donation. This week, I am going to continue with that topic. Organ and tissue donation is a subject very near and dear to my heart. Professionally, I have seen so many lives impacted for the better after working with several heart transplant programs over the years. A nurse I worked with several years ago, her infant daughter received a liver from a generous donor. She is now a happy and healthy tween. Without that liver, she wouldn't have survived her first year of life. My husband and my dad have both had their sight saved by corneal transplants, and in the year 2000, I received a graft of donated bone after a serious neck injury. I would not be able to do most of the things I do now without the generosity of a donor. There are few more generous gifts than anyone can give than the gift of life to another. The statistics on organ and tissue donation are astonishing and really show how much one person can impact others and how huge the need for donors is. Here in Odessa, we work with two different organizations for organ and tissue donation, Southwest Transplant Alliance and the Western Texas Lions Eye Bank Alliance. Those two organizations work very closely together because of the impact that one organ or tissue donor can have on so many things. One of the statistics that always amazes me is that one person can save up to 8 lives and improve the quality of life for 75 others. It's such an incredible impact with that one decision. For organ and tissue donation, we work with Southwest Transplant Alliance, or STA. In 2020, 401 people in Texas donated their organs through STA. They recovered 1,302 organs from those generous donors. 713 people were able to donate tissues through STA. Between the organ and tissue donors, more than 37,000 lives in Texas were positively impacted. Western Texas Lions Eye Bank Alliance collects corneas from generous donors. In 2016, 50,000 Americans received corneal transplants that restored their sight. Unfortunately, with rare exception, organ and tissue donation is an end-of-life decision. We can now take parts of livers, one kidney, bone marrow, stem cells, blood, and blood products from living donors, but everything else has to be donated by someone who has died. For most organs, the criteria are even more narrow because the person has to be brain dead, but their heart and other organs still have to be functional with the help of life support devices. That means that only 3 out of every 1,000 deaths occur in a manner where organs can be donated. That is not even close to the demand for transplanted organs. In Texas alone, more than 10,000 people are waiting for a donated organ. 100,000 people in the U.S. need organ transplants. Every 9 minutes, someone gets added to that list. Because the demand is so much higher than the supply, 17 people die every day waiting for a transplanted organ. There are many myths associated with organ and tissue donation. I wanted to debunk a few of them. Race, social status, and fame never play a factor in the allocation of donated tissues or organs. Anyone can register to donate, regardless of their health status or age. Registering as a donor has absolutely no effect on how you are cared for by medical personnel. Most major U.S. religions support donation. Donors can have an open casket funeral if they want. There are no costs associated with donation. Because so few people can donate because of the circumstances of their death, it's very important that everyone register as a donor. You can do that online through organ.org/register. You can say yes to organ donation when you renew your driver's license, or you can record your decision on a smartphone health app. Make sure your family knows that you want to donate and why. it might inspire them to donate as well. I cannot say how much I hope you register to donate. I registered years ago. I hope that when my time comes, I am eligible to give someone else a chance. After all, it's not like I'll need that stuff after I'm gone. In closing, I want to thank our local STA and Lions Eye Bank representatives. You do an incredible job in supporting people during a very difficult time and through what can be difficult decisions if a person has not spoken to their family about donation. You make sure the process of donation runs smoothly so every possible organ and tissue that people donate is put to good use. I also appreciate all the information you gave me to write this article. Thank you so much.
What is rotator cuff disease? Dear Dr. Roach, I told my primary care physician that I have had a sore shoulder for several months. He ordered a shoulder x-ray. I got results back online, and it said that I had sclerosis and irregularity consistent with chronic rotator cuff disease. My next appointment with my doctor is months away. What is rotator cuff disease, and can I exercise to fix it? KB. Answer. The rotator cuff consists of four muscles and their tendons, which help to provide stability to the shoulder. The rotator cuff, whether through tear or inflammation, is a common source of shoulder injury. The diagnosis of rotator cuff disease is generally made by a history and physical exam, and the x-rays do not always make the diagnosis. Bedside ultrasound is a newer technique that helps. MRI is used when the diagnosis is uncertain and surgery is contemplated. Treatment depends on the underlying cause of the rotator cuff disease. A full thickness tear of a rotator cuff tendon usually requires surgery, while tendinosis and partial thickness tears are usually treated by rest, anti-inflammatories, and physical therapy. I cannot recommend exercises until you complete a full evaluation and are prescribed the current exercises for your special issue. Months is too long to wait. An untreated rotator cuff syndrome can lead to a frozen shoulder.
Widow wonders if age creates boundary for intimacy. Dear Abby for Thursday. Dear Abby, my wife of 41 years passed away 4 years ago. I'm in my mid-60s. I've sought grief counseling to fully process her loss. The counselor has encouraged me to maintain and expand my peer relationships. The counselor has also encouraged dating, which I have tried, but no romances have resulted. My wife was diagnosed with bipolar type 2 mental disorder, which progressed the longer she lived. When she died, I was glad she no longer had to suffer with her mental illness. With the onset of menopause and the bipolar, her libido had dropped dramatically. The counselor has assured me that if romance develops, sexual relations can happen with women my age. Because of my religious convictions, I will not have sexual relations before marriage. My question concerns a woman's desire for sexual relations at this stage of life. Are sexual relations something that can be mutually enjoyed, or just a requirement of marriage? Wondering in Iowa. Dear Wondering, allow me to put your concerns to rest. Seniors are not clones of each other. Some enjoy sex into their 80s, others do not. If both partners are comfortable with their bodies and willing to accommodate the inevitable changes that come as their bodies age, they can enjoy sex as much as couples who are younger. While your religious beliefs may not allow you to have sex before marriage, there is no reason why this subject can't be honestly discussed, and this is what I urge you to do if you become involved with someone. Dear Abby, recently my daughter asked if her girlfriend could stay with us until the two of them move out in a month. To help them out, my husband and I agreed. The problem is, the girlfriend is very insecure about her weight. She's on the heavier side, and my daughter's weight is average. Sometimes when we're talking about fitness or nutrition, It feels like a sore subject for her. I don't want her to feel uncomfortable around us because I watch what I eat. Advice? Weighty issue in Washington. Dear Weighty Issue, ask your daughter if mentioning these topics makes her girlfriend uncomfortable. Keep in mind that your house guest will be staying with you only a few more weeks. Until she leaves, refrain from discussing topics that make her uncomfortable in her presence. Dear Abby, I am 60 and disabled. I desperately would like a dog. I'm not a cat person. I can't get a bird because I have lupus. Working at a shelter isn't an option. I added up the pluses and minuses, and the minuses were more plentiful. However, the pluses are so tempting. Logically, I know it would not be fair to either of us. The wiser part of myself says no, but I want someone who is happy when I come home, kisses me, sits on my lap, and shares my bed, and someone to care for. Any advice? Nurturer in New York. Dear Nurturer, rescue a dog who needs nurturing as much as you do. Adopt an older one from an animal rescue, and you may save two lives at once. That said, it's important you discuss those pluses and minuses with a veterinarian and take out pet insurance just in case the need arises.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.